Hello and welcome to episode 8 of We Are Liverpool. It's the official LFC podcast where you'll hear from current and former players about their lives on and off the pitch. And today we're back with the first team again. Already this season we've heard from the likes of James Milner and Andy Robertson, and we're turning our attention now to the young man Pep Linders described as our little diamond. Harvey Elliott sat down with Robbie Fowler and myself to talk about his formative years in football and the adversity that has come along the way. It's a fascinating listen, and here's a little taste of what to expect in the show.
The security guard came running to me. I was like, Harvey, you're needed. You're needed in the tunnel right now. I'd done the walk to the penalty. That's when it just went bam. I was like, right, I'm going
to
score.
If you were to break down at the side of a road, flat tyre, who's the first player you ring?
You know what? This is probably going to be a bizarre person. I don't feel like I've felt anything like that in my life.
I think it was over then?
Yeah. I thought, right, well, I'm finished.
Before we get into the episode, just a short message to tell you about our LFC Store app. It's available to download on Apple and Android now, and will give you access to exclusive discounts and offers on official products too. So here's what happened when Harvey joined us.
Harvey, welcome to We Are Liverpool. Now, we do start every episode, obviously, when we get the guests in, ask them what Liverpool is to them. So can you tell us, what is your Liverpool?
For me, it's my dream, not only playing for the club, but being able to live in the city, the people around it, seeing everyone come together as a community, as a city, and for me, there's no place like it, and it feels like home. Yeah, just the buzz around the city, it's, yeah, unbelievable every time I go. I mean, shouldn't be going out as much as I do, but when but when you live in a city like this, it's hard not to. Obviously, the history behind it, and as I keep saying, just the people in itself, it's, for me, there's no place like home, and home's here.
When he says he goes out too much, does he mean he's going out like you used to go out? Conte's gone now.
You know what I love about that, just that opening little gambit there, was the fact is that, you know, it feels like home. Now, obviously, you're not a Scouser, but I know that you are a Liverpool fan. But it's interesting, isn't it? It feels like home.
Is that just because of the way you were brought up with Liverpool everywhere, and it was just your life then?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, being a Liverpool supporter, my whole family's Liverpool as well. So like for me, that was big. But I'm not gonna lie, I was very scared moving up here because
it's like not that bad.
But I didn't know. Being such a young kid, I didn't know what it'd be like. You know, coming completely away from my family, like my granddads and my uncles and stuff like that, my close friends. It was hard. It was basically just starting fresh for me and. Me bringing my brother and sister up as well, not knowing how they would fit in and get on. And yeah, I mean, as soon as I arrived, I was like, yeah, this feels
is
like
all
home.
When you say that, so all your family has come down with you?
Yeah, so my mum, dad, brother and sister have all moved up. So not only me, it was obviously a big sacrifice and a big thing for my family as well.
Never knew that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big insight and a big kind of dose of reality for everybody listening and watching this, isn't it? That, you know, the way academy players come, sometimes they will have to make that decision as a family. We all have to go to give Harvey the best chance of succeeding at Liverpool.
Definitely, yeah. And for me, it was a massive positive, you know, having my family around, helping me settle in quicker. It was the best possible move I could ever make.
I know you're a Liverpool fan, and I always ask the question, you know, who was your favourite player and why was I? But I've looked at your date of birth and you're born in 2003, so you don't have a clue how that you played. So
is that probably favourite player?
You are my dad, and when I told him I was coming on the podcast, he asked if he could come. But yeah, I had to keep him away. He'll probably be at the door listening in a minute. But yeah, I think growing up, it was, I mean, the main person to stand out was obviously Steven Gerrard, you know, watching him. But for me, I loved Daniel Sturridge as well. When he was in his prime, I remember going to the Fulham away game, and I was in the away end, and I think it was the day where he scored the hat-trick, the chip from outside the box or something like that. I think that's when I sort of, I looked around and I was like, wow, like this support then was unbelievable, and just, you know, seeing the players. And for me, I was just dreaming of being on that pitch in any shirt. You know, as a kid growing up, you want to be a footballer, and to be able to say, like, I've played for Liverpool and still playing for Liverpool now, it's more than a dream for me.
It's a reminder as to how young you are. We were looking through before, you know, making your debut as a 15-year-old, for example. You've had that pressure all through your life then from a very young age.
Yeah, I think so. And I just think the player I am as well. You know, people in the academy days were kind of looking to me into trying to create or score a goal, and that's the kind of pressure you build up on yourself. You know, being an attacking player, everyone looks at you in that way. For me, pressure's not really a problem. It's something that I love doing. I get more, well, I was more nervous singing the initiation song than I actually am playing. So for me, that's pressure. But just playing football, you know, it's my dream, and you can't feel pressure when you're dreaming and living your dream. And yeah, for me, it's just going out and enjoying myself and playing for the badge.
I can remember you coming on that training camp when you first became a Liverpool player. You were 16 then, and I remember looking at you just thinking, he's dead confident.
Yeah.
There was the big inflatables where you were kicking the ball against the dartboard and it was sticking.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The senior players warmed to you straight away.
Yeah.
How were you feeling inside though when you were there?
I mean, it was mixed emotions. Like, part of me was not trying to, you know, make a fool out of myself. You know what young kids are like, and but at the same time trying to enjoy the moment, like seeing these players off the pitch and looking up to them and idolising them. And then, for example, like being next to Virgil van Dijk, like you're looking up at him going, wow, like he's really that tall. And for me, it was just mixed emotions, but at the same time, you know, I was just loving it, and I just wanted to give the best impression of myself, and as hopefully I have done, but, you know, every player to like me as a person and as a player.
Was that an individual thing, or did someone at the club say to you, well, this is the way you've got to act, or is that you just as...
No, it was just individually, I think. There's no one really at the club who'll pull you to a side and be like, right, you need to act like this, you need to act like that. It's just, at the end of the day, we're all adults, and it's the way you act. But for me, it was just going in there and just making sure I gave the right impression to everyone. Obviously, being a young kid as well, I didn't want to get on anyone's nerves or didn't want to annoy anyone. I just wanted to, you know, go out and train as hard as I could and kind of win people over that way.
How were the players' reactions to you? Well, because obviously you are a young lad,
yeah,
and you come in, obviously your talent and the way you play is obviously brilliant, but the players must relate to you as a person before a player.
It felt like I'd been at the club for my whole life. As soon as I arrived, everyone was so warm, and everyone, you know, got me involved in like the banter and like the team bonding kind of thing. And yeah, just the way I was able to settle in, it was a massive help. And as I've already said, like, it felt like home instantly. It felt like I've been at the club for years now. And yeah, it was just, you know, going out and training with like my mates, for example, it felt like that. And yeah, I mean, it's just all credit to the team and to everyone involved in the club.
You've been there though, Rob, as a senior player. When you see a young player train for the first time and he's good, that helps you warm to them, doesn't it? And they'd obviously seen him play, they'd seen him train.
Absolutely, and I think it does make a big difference. The fact is, how you come in, you're confident, and I think people were aware of sort of how good you were sort of growing up, academy level coming through. But if you go into them training sessions and people appreciate you as a player and know that they can stand by you, then, you know, it opens up so many more doors for you in terms of your relationship with players. I mean, it's frightening that you can come and you play for such a big club and sort of stand out as, I mean, we spoke as a person, but as an individual. I mean, that must make you feel very proud, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, in the same way, it's everything that I've kind of worked for. All the effort that I've put in individually, you know, off the training pitch to make myself stronger, to make myself, you know, more kind of aware to the men's game, and my family as well, to be able to be doing what I'm doing now and the dream that I'm living. It's all credit to the people around me. It's just obviously down to me to go and execute it in the games and in training, and yeah, just to show that I'm good enough in a way.
How did you find, obviously, coming into the game? You just mentioned about coming into a senior game and you're playing with all the adults. How did you find it when you made your debut when you were 15, going from playing kids football, yeah, to all of a sudden being thrust into the adult game?
As a footballer, I felt fine, but it was more the things around it. Like, obviously, you go from academy football where there's maybe 50 to 100 people watching, and then I think it was Millwall where there may have been 10, 15,000 people watching. But yeah, there was like a few things that were said to me whilst I was warming up and stuff like that. And I was like, what the hell? Like, I was thinking to myself, like, I haven't heard of any of these things before, like, nor experienced it. That's when I kind of realised. I was like, right, I'm in a men's environment here. Like, I need to go from the boy to a man really quickly. And I think just from then it kind of like I didn't really go back to the boy, obviously, which is what I needed to do to kind of adapt to the men's environment and get used to it.
How many years up would you have played when you were a kid?
I think I was 14 and I was playing 23s.
Yeah. I mean, you're coming up against proper men.
Oh, honestly, then, aren't you? It was... But even in the younger ages, though, like you come up against some players and they were like twice the size of me. And like I would say to my dad, I was like, how is he that tall? I was like, well, look, what's happened? Why am I this small and he's that tall? And yeah, like some of the players you come up against, even in the academy level, like they've matured a lot. Throughout my kind of academy years, I've always played up a year. The only time I would maybe play in my own age group is if I wanted to play, like if it was a cup game, or one that stood out for me was the Chelsea games. So whatever age group it was, I'd always want to play. Just because it was like a mini rivalry back in the day. We were kind of classed as like the best two teams like down south. So yeah, it was always a big game. Whether it was like a friendly, a league match or a cup match. And there was one game where the coach was telling me to not play because he knew what it'd be like. It was at their ground as well, and he was like, look, you're going to get targeted, you're going to get tackles on you, the manager's going to be like, right, he's playing, so make sure like he'd not be able to do anything. And I think we won 3-2 in the end.
Didn't have any doubts about whether you were going to play or not. You were definitely playing.
Yeah, I said to the manager, I was like, look, I don't care what's going to happen, I want to play, you know, I want to help my team, I want to just win for myself as well. And yeah, we ended up winning 3-2, and he came to me at the end of the game and said thank you for playing. And for me, it was like, no matter what the situation was, when the game was, I would want to play on a Saturday, then play the next day on a Sunday. And I think just at such a young age, like I just always wanted to, you know, play football, and always wanted to go out with my friends and play over the park and stuff. And I think that's where my dad came into it a lot and helped me out, because sometimes he'd be like, nah, look, you need to rest, you can't keep going out and playing, you need to let your body recover, and you need to make sure that, you know, you're fresh for training and like the game's coming up and stuff. So for me, as annoyed as I was, like looking back now, it's massive just to get that, you know, recovery and not get too kind of excited and playing too much football.
You've come through all the academy teams, played reserve team football, first team football. So we all know that you are technically very, very good. But what stands out here now is your mentality. So from a young age, you've had the mental capacity to get better and to understand what the adult game's like. That's a young age.
I can remember when you got injured though, Harvey, yeah. And the physios, and the Nobes in particular, who you're close to and helped with the rehab. What a tough kid. You know, they couldn't believe how quickly you got back from it. And there's obviously a theme there that you were toughened up at that age, and it was just part of your makeup.
Yeah, it goes back to another story. When I was at Fulham and I broke my collarbone in a game, and it was the first 12 minutes of the game, I think, or 13 minutes, and I didn't want to come off. Like it was hanging out basically. I didn't want to come off, and I was like, look, I don't care. Like I was running around like this because I couldn't move it. Obviously, I had to come off in the end. After, I think, 20 minutes later or something like that, it got to a point where every time I moved it, like it was unbearable pain. So I had to go for a scan the next day. Obviously, I was annoyed with myself and like with the circumstance and stuff like that. And I was kind of beating myself up around it because it was something that I could have prevented, but I didn't. And then the next day, I went for a scan. They came back, and after the x-ray, they said, right, you're going to be out for 6 weeks. I was like, okay, it's not too bad. It's better than what I thought. I got in the car and said to my dad, no, I'm coming back in 3 weeks. Came back in 3 weeks, and I think I played my game. The next game I played was maybe 2 weeks and just under 3 weeks, so maybe 2 weeks and 6 days or something like that. And the physios at Fulham, obviously trying to protect me as well, was going, no, like you can't be doing it. Went for the x-ray, and it healed up perfectly fine. And it was the exact same with my injury. I went to the specialist, and they said, I think, 6 months. I said to my dad, no, coming back in 4. And I looked at the schedule and saw, I think it was the Cardiff game, or maybe one before that. It might have been, I'm not sure the game before, but I may have aimed for that game, but it was just hit and miss because I think there was an international break in between. So like just team training and stuff like that, I couldn't get the sessions in that I needed. So I was like, okay, fine, the Cardiff game is my aim.
Was there ever a doubt though in your mind? I mean, you talk about schedules there, but you know, there's some dark moments when you're injured, I presume, where you just doubt whether you'll ever come back to be the same player.
Yeah, and I mean, that was probably more of them days than there was where I was, you know, strong and thought to myself, look, I'm going to be better, I'm going to be this. And there were some days where it did get to me, you know. It was times where I was just by myself. I wanted to come in the building, you know, and just put a smile on to everyone to show that, like, I'm okay and, you know, it's not affected me. But deep inside it did. Obviously, not being able to play football is one thing, but to be able to kind of go from playing matches at the start of the season and just to be, boom, you're out and injured for this long, and the manner that I was injured in, and you hear, like, people say stuff and, like, just obviously things around social media and stuff, as hard as it is to kind of stay off it, you still see these things. And for me, it was very tough, but it kind of kept me going, like, trying to prove people wrong. And yeah, there was one comment actually, which was one that stuck by me from the start of my rehab to when I scored against Cardiff, and it said, "You'll never walk again." And I thought, right, like, I'm going to take that and run with it and, you know, come back. And the way that I came back, it was kind of like everything that I went through in the last months of like rehab and obviously all the pain that I went through to get to Cardiff and to be able to, you know, score. And yeah, it being my first goal for Liverpool as well in a competitive game, it was just all a dream come true for me.
I've had my fair share of injuries as well, but when I've had obviously major injuries, I've always appreciated the game a little bit more, because you're not there, you're not training with your teammates, you're not playing games, and you actually miss it more, you know.
Yeah.
And you do appreciate the game. I mean, I'm not sure what it's the same with you, but I'd be amazed if it's not. It's horrible, and you can't wait to get back. You're hearing stuff on, you know, social media, or you're reading stuff on social media, and that's driving you to get back pretty quick, because you appreciate it.
Yeah, it was. That's exactly what I said to my dad as well. I was like, you know what, I want to go back and just enjoy the moment, you know, enjoy being back with the boys, enjoy just even like training at their time, because obviously like with different games and stuff like that, I'll be training in the morning where there maybe only have been two other players in there that are injured as well, and all the lads are coming in the evening to train. It's like just being together with everyone. It's it was massive for me, and you do appreciate it, you know, more when you're away from it than you actually do in it. This is why this season I'm just trying to enjoy every moment, enjoy every minute that I possibly can, and just try and smile as much as possible.
Just a quick break in today's episode to let you know that if you've been enjoying We Are Liverpool, every episode is available to watch 24 hours before the podcast drops. Head to YouTube and sign up as a member, and there you can access our Academy tier or above, and that means you'll get to watch our next episode before anyone else. Alternatively, you can register to LFC TV Go for free and still get early access. Head to liverpoolfc.com/video for more information on that. Now let's get back to the show.
Let's lighten the load a little bit. Haircut, is this the best haircut we've had on yet?
It's probably up there.
I wouldn't say best.
It's,
yeah.
It's a hell of a barn. There's lots of conversations going on in the dressing room about haircuts, isn't there? Was there a bet with Millie over yours on the top knot?
Yeah, there actually was. That was probably the most... I don't know how to describe the Cardiff goal, because it was the best goal and probably the most disheartening goal in the world, because that means... like, I had to fully go with it. He said, your first competitive goal, you had to, you know, you had to chop the ponytail off and get a normal haircut. So,
did you want to keep the ponytail?
Yeah, I did.
And the goal?
I did, yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about that dressing room then, Harvey. You talked about the players kind of taking you under their wing a little bit. Mo is somebody you've become very close to.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've idolised him at some point as well as a Liverpool fan, but now at a point where, you know, he's advising you on how to train, how long to train, what to eat, all that kind of thing. Give us a little bit more of an insight on all of that.
Yeah, Mo in himself, obviously, his football ability, it's one thing, and him as a human, it's another. And yeah, just the way he's been with me throughout, obviously, me joining, like, you don't realise what he does off the pitch. Obviously, you can see what he does on the pitch, but it's hard to describe, because it's one of them where you knew all of these things before, but now he's like, he's constantly on your case in a good way, just in the way to show that he cares. And for me, it was obviously the one story that I think everyone's heard about is we was in Austria, and I think it was breakfast, or it may have been breakfast or dinner, one or the other. And I had two bread rolls, because like I normally do it with every breakfast or meal, just like because it's one of my favourites. And he came over to me and he was like, no, put them back. Here, have the brown ones. And I was thinking, wow, like he's actually scanning or like seeing visually what I'm trying to eat or what I'm eating, and you know, helping me out. And yeah, I mean, that's just one of about 1,000 stories that he's been with me and he's shared. And I mean, it's probably obviously not all because of him, but a big help into where I am today, you know, being able to play the way I play, to be having him on the right side, just the, you know, the confidence for me to go out and play the way I want to play, and know he's there, like fully, you know, backing me and supporting me and trying to help me out in the games as well. And yeah, for me, there's no best person to, you know, look up to than Mo. He's in the gym about an hour and 15 minutes before training, and he's doing bits after training, and in training he's working as hard as he can and, you know, trying to get the most out of each and everything. But for me, that's like everyone in the building, you know, that he's just one of every player that does it. And obviously Millie and Hendo, look at Millie in particular, just the way he handles himself and, you know, his physique, and to be able to train at the highest level and him be probably one of the best trainers in training as well, it's just all credit to him. And to have me being a younger player, and obviously the younger players that are coming up as well, to have him in and around the building, you know, looking after us and putting his arm around us, telling us what we need to do, what we can do better, and just giving us like pointers. It's, I mean, you might not appreciate it now, but in the years to come, when you're looking back, you would think wow, what a professional he was. And I mean, everything that he's achieved throughout his career as well, it just speaks for itself.
What's the relationship? I know you've mentioned it about what he's like, and obviously Millie and a few other players, Mo, about you as a person. Don't need this, you know, this is the way you train, this is the way you look after yourself. Does that stop once you leave the training ground or once you're away from a match? What's the relationship outside of football like with the guys?
I mean, we're always messaging in the group chat or privately messaging. Maybe some don't message each other more than others, but we're kind of like a family here. We're always looking out for each other, and you know, we're always checking on if each other's okay and stuff like that. But at the same time, it's kind of nice to come away from it. Like, I probably see these boys more than I see my family and stuff. So like, when you're away and you know you want to have the family time, it's nice just to, you know, switch the phone off, just come away from everything and just enjoy that time. Because being a footballer yourself, you don't get as much time off as people would think, and it's tough, you know, to try and find the time to go out with your family, to enjoy the family time. It is tough, but you just need to, you know, enjoy it as much as you can, and just come away from the football side.
Who's the busiest on WhatsApp then? Who's the first to comment on something or the first to give someone a little bit of stick if they need it? We've all got a name in our heads, haven't we? It's just whether it's the reality.
I think I have a few. I think Millie's probably up there, but in a good way, because it's one of them. Like, he's always, you know, firing banter around. Robbo's up there as well. But I mean, everyone chips in. It's one of them. Yeah, it just depends on the situation.
Here's one for you then. You'll obviously have road cover on your car, but if you were to break down at the side of a road, flat tyre, who's the first player you ring? Who's someone that could practically help you with something like that?
Oh,
you're struggling here.
It's a good sign.
That's a worry, that.
Yeah, it's a good sign.
You know what? This is probably, it's going to be a bizarre person, but I would say Joe Gomez, just because I don't feel like he would pie me off. He's so much of a nice guy that he would be like, okay, like, I'll come to you. I'm not sure if I could help, but I don't know what he's like with cars, but I just feel like he would probably be 95% sure that he would be able to come and try and help me out, or at least just come, whereas the others would probably laugh in my face and end the call and I'll just be left alone.
I got a story we're talking about. I was a manager of a team in Bangkok, a team called Muang Thong United. So myself and my coach in the car, and we're driving down the motorway, and we're seeing one of the players trying to fix his car to the side, so we stopped. I fixed his tyre to the side of the motorway. He gets off, goes away. I get back into my car with my my assistant, tries to start the car, and it wouldn't go.
Oh, no.
And I obviously, being like, you know, a proper gentleman, went out and fixed his car, and I had to wait, honestly, for 4 hours for their equivalent to the AA to come out and fix my car. Me being a good gentleman.
That's the thing, yeah. Sometimes it just needs to be selfish, but I mean, at the same time, you need to be a good gent, but sometimes
it that, though. Joe it would answer back. The phone too. He's not sure all of them would, but...
Joe would... A lot, yeah, Joe's... I mean, probably one of the nicest guys I've ever met, and if there's anyone that would try to help, it would be him. I just think the others would, not in a bad way, but just find it funny and, I don't know, tell me to do one, basically.
If they were to Google Harvey Elliott, you know, non-Liverpool fans, everybody knows about your story, but you're there in 2018 watching Liverpool as a fan in the Champions League final. Seems like round the corner, yeah. You're in the squad, you know, for the biggest game possible. Mm-hmm. But you had an opportunity to join Real Madrid.
And I did.
Liverpool was the
yeah.
choice.
It was just a mixture of things, to be honest. And I was close to going to Madrid, and then I think Liverpool came in. And as soon as I heard they came in, that was it. My heart was set on it, just because mainly being a Liverpool fan, all the family, and it was my dad's dream to play for Liverpool himself, but he didn't quite make it in that way. But my little brother as well. My little brother's a massive Liverpool supporter, probably one of the biggest I've ever seen in my life. He's coming with information that I didn't even know, and he don't play for the team. And I'm like, where did you get that from? He's like, oh, I don't know, I heard it from such and such in the players' lounge or whatever. It's like, oh wow, like he's
what an existence for him though.
Yeah, I mean,
your little brother.
Yeah, he's so happy, and just being in and around the team, like seeing the players on a daily, like coming from obviously training and the games and stuff like that. I've never seen him so happy in my life. And yeah, for him to be that happy for me, it puts on a massive smile on me, and just brings me a buzz. And for him to be living the dream as well, essentially, it's just lovely. But also something that played a big part was my brother and sister as well, moving them abroad. It's a new culture, different language, and they were such a young age as well, just to kind of pluck them away from everything. For me, it wasn't that bad because I knew I'd be able to, you know, make friends in like the team and stuff like that, and to be able to hang around with them. And settling in for me wasn't the problem. It was just about my family, and I just wanted them to be happy as much as anything. And yeah, I mean, what a place to be living.
What was it like then being around just perennial success, then winners? You were sat alongside, you know, people that were just achieving unbelievable things, and you were a massive part of that, playing in the biggest games, you know, penalty shootouts at Wembley, scoring penalties when you didn't even think you were going to be involved in the team on the
day. That experience was probably one of the craziest experiences of my life. It was just mixed emotions throughout the whole kind of the whole build up to it. Obviously being disappointed that I'm not in the squad, understanding the situation as well, and it being such a big game against Chelsea. And
can you remember that moment at which you were told it's not going to happen for you today, you're not going to be in the squad at Wembley?
Yeah, so we was all there as a team, and we already knew that obviously everyone wasn't going to be in the squad, but they just wanted it to be a team spirit, everyone around, you know, just that team chemistry, going from arriving at the hotel to leaving the stadium. They just wanted everyone there together. But with me, like, I'm always confident in myself, and I was confident I was going to be in the team. Maybe that was me being ambitious, but being such a big game, I was like, right, I wanted to help the team if I can and stuff like that. And obviously the team, it was kind of the first time you get shown it is when he so the gaffer does like a meeting with the whole team before you leave for the stadium, like pulls the team sheet down, basically the starting 11 and then like the subs. And like I wasn't starting already, and I was just looking at the sub trying to like scan for my name, and I couldn't see it. And as annoyed as I was, like, I didn't want to, you know, make it about myself. I didn't want to have the effect on, you know, everyone else, to, you know, the disappointment that I was feeling. And yeah, like, I was upset. I was annoyed with myself because clearly I didn't do enough to get in the team. And then, yeah, like, obviously the build up to the game, watching the lads warm up and stuff like that, I was getting over it a bit. I was like, right, come on, I'll just, as I've always done, support the team as a fan, you know, try and cheer them on in that way and give them as much confidence, you know, and encouragement as I can. And then I think it was Thiago, maybe, who got injured in the final. Yeah, he got injured in the warm-up. And I saw him walking, like, down the tunnel, and I was thinking, oh, like where's he going? Just out of, obviously, worry for him. Then, yeah, like, I was still in the stand with the other lads who weren't in the squad. And then the security guard came running to me and was like, Harvey, you're needed in the tunnel right now. And I was like, oh no. Instantly I thought something's happened with my family or something happened back home, and I thought, oh no, like this day could go from bad to worse. And I was like, I was panicking. I was like, what's wrong? To the security guards, like, I don't know. Like, they just want you in a tunnel. And I was like, oh God. So that 10 seconds from the walk from the stand to the tunnel was probably the worst of my life. Just thinking, what's happened? What's going on? And then Pep came to me, I think it was, or Vitor, and said, oh, you're in the squad. And part of me was relieved, but I was annoyed as well, because I was like, oh, I've got myself worked up so much thinking something else has happened. And he said, you have like 2 minutes to get all your kit on, to get ready, to obviously go out on the bench like for the kickoff. So yeah, it was like, I was on the bench, and I remember the first 5 minutes, I was like, what am I doing? Like, what's going on? I was trying to get my head around things. Like, I was trying to, you know, get my game face on, in a way, going from disappointment to being in the squad to the bits in between, walking to the tunnel. My head was all over the place. And then probably got to about 15, 20 minutes into the game where I was like, right, okay, I'm composed. I need to relax. I need to focus on the game. Obviously, see if I'm going to be coming on. And I thought to myself, it was unlikely that I'd be coming on. Obviously, going from not in the squad to then in the squad and then to playing, I thought, the likelihood of it happening isn't really a possibility, but I still wanted to, you know, prepare in the best way. And then, yeah, I think it was the 80th minute or maybe 79th, the manager obviously throws me on. I'm like, wow. And then, yeah, it was just, I think the rest was history from there.
I think, obviously, very diplomatic in your answer in terms of when you're not playing. I mean, that's probably one of the worst experiences I've ever had in football, was missing out on the 2001 FA Cup final. The manager telling the team, and you've just explained that well, and then seen like names, but your name's on it. And for me, that was my worst moments of football. I understand where you've gone or where you are, and then where you've gone to. So you've gone from being unbelievably distraught, and then being pivotal in winning a trophy. You know, coming on, playing well, and end up scoring a penalty. So,
yeah.
I mean, how would you get from there to there? And
I mean, I think it just shows you how much football can change like that. And it just shows that people don't understand how much you need to be, you know, focused. Even like now, for example, if I'm not starting, I'm always thinking to myself, right, something could happen. As much as I don't want it to happen, but someone could get injured. I don't know, something else could happen. And, you know, I could be put in a team. Like, for example, one of the games was the Leicester game. I wasn't supposed to be starting, but Fabinho had to rush home because I think his wife was having a baby. And that's just one of many examples probably in football where you always need to be ready. It's even in the game. If the game starts, you always need to be ready to come on whatever minute it is. Anyone could get injured. And yeah, I think it's just the way you prepare is probably the outcome of how are you going to perform in the game. And I think if you're too down and disheartened and disappointed, which is understandable as well, but you need to bring yourself back up, you need to stay positive, and you need to keep thinking positively, because not only will it affect this game, it could affect other games, because people could be looking at how you're reacting, people could be thinking, he thinks it's all about him, he's not being there for his teammates, blah blah blah, he's not cheering them on. And you know, it could affect it further down the line. And yeah, for me, it's just about, if I'm not in a team, supporting the team, being there as a fan, you know, being there as like a good person, you know, cheering them on and stuff like that. But at the same time, as I said, you always need to be prepared and you always need to stay focused.
How did it feel that would obviously end up scoring a penalty and then winning the trophy and being significant in helping Liverpool win it?
Honestly, I was so scared.
Really scared.
The build up to me, I was, because everyone just kept scoring and I thought, oh no, like I just didn't want to be that person to miss. But then, yeah, it was like I felt really scared up until I'd done the walk to the penalty. That's when it just went bam. I was like, right, I know I'm gonna score. Obviously having the whole of like the Liverpool fans there as well, I was just thinking to myself, there's no better place to score in front of the Liverpool fans in a big competition and final like this. There's no better place to do it at Wembley as well. So for me, as soon as I'd done the walk, I was like, right, I'm going to score. I knew where I was going to go. And it's quite funny because I think it was Kepa was pointing that way as well. And it was playing on my mind. I was like, oh, okay. So, like, he wants me to go there. And then, obviously, I knew because he went that way. So, I knew he was going to go that way. And I just, as soon as I struck the ball, I thought, right, just get it on target and it's in. And then, yeah, it wasn't a bad penalty.
When you scored, was there, like, a little bit of relief, but did you also know where your family was? So, go and look at your dad and...
I didn't know where they were. I didn't know. But it was funny because where I celebrated, they were, like... diagonally basically looking down on me, so where I celebrated,
you got them the cheap seats, yeah.
Yeah. Had to. The way I celebrated, it was right in their eye line, so it was just kind of like a magical moment. And I don't think my mum actually watched the penalty. I think my mum walked down like into the tunnel thing and looked away, and she came up, she's like, did he score? And obviously she must have heard the crowd, but yeah, she gets really, really scared, and one of them, and she's constantly saying, oh, I don't know how you scored that, the pressure, all of this. But as I said before, you don't really feel the pressure. It's just, it's your job. And as I said, what a better place to do it at Wembley, you know, in front of all the Liverpool fans as well. And it was just a massive sigh of relief. And I think just emotionally as well, everything I went through throughout that game and even before the game, being disappointed to then score and then to winning, it was like, for me, it was just a massive, you know, outburst of emotion and relief.
Am I right in thinking that was you rejected as a young kid at Chelsea? Was that before QPR, yeah, or was that?
That was.
And what was the reason behind that?
I think that was after QPR, and just quite frankly, because I was too small. I think I remember them saying, or my dad saying to me, that technically they said I'm one of the best in the group, but I'm just too small. And yeah, for me, that was like, I don't feel like I've felt anything like that in my life or in my football career so far, in terms of how I felt after they said that. Like, being such a young kid, knowing that you ain't going to get the opportunity to play or to get signed.
Do you think it was over then?
Yeah. I thought, right, well, I'm finished. Like, I'm not going to have a football career. You know, I respected their decision and thought to myself, well, after obviously I got through the emotional stage, I felt, well, okay, if that's their decision, that's their decision. And then I think I played, like, I think it was Saturday League or Sunday League for a bit with my friends, just to kind of, you know, get that enjoyment up and passion for football again. And then I went to, I think it was Fulham I went to after that.
Coming back from that adversity is what football is all about, yeah, isn't it? You've experienced the very biggest of highs, and
yeah,
you know, this season's not gone the way anybody wanted it to go. And it's about reaction, isn't it? It's about coming back from the adversity. So as the injuries, as the upbringing that you've had, all of those things mixed in together, helped you in this moment now?
Yeah, I think so. I think everything you could probably go through as a footballer, like I've probably been through it at such a young age. So it's only going to keep making me stronger. And now more than ever, like if this was before I've been through all of these things, I think I would have dealt with it a different way, or not reacted in a different way, but I felt like personally I would have, you know, beat myself up, which sometimes I do if I have a bad game, you know, it's, or make a mistake for a goal. Like the Brentford game, I was distraught, not only losing the game, but knowing that you conceded a goal through my mistake. It's not a nice thing, but these things happen in football. It's just about how you come back now, how you, you know, reflect on the game, how you go into the next game, preparing, and just personally in a mental state, just to, you know, go out and put everything aside to go out and perform in that game. It's massive now, and I feel like that's one thing that I've definitely learned throughout my football career so far.
You've talked so much about your dad, about your family. You scored a big goal as well, your first Premier League goal in the 9-0 for your nan. I mean, there's so many themes in this that just tie back to probably what is responsible for you being such a brilliant lad all these years later is that family.
Yeah, I feel like, obviously, without them, and I think anyone in the kind of footballing world, playing professionally, family is a massive, massive key and a massive kind of, you know, help into where people are today. Just that drive, you know, the support. If there's one, or I'd say a few people that are always going to be supporting you, no matter the situation, is your family. So, yeah. I think everyone needs to be thankful for them. Even outside of football, you know, family is massive and a major important thing for me.
something written in the stars with that goal, for it to be the first in the Premier League, for it to be such a fantastic goal as well that it would be?
Yeah, it was. It was an emotional goal as well, because I think, so when was the game? I think it may have been on a Saturday, either the Friday or the Thursday. I lost my nan, so, and then my mum said to me, oh, you're going to score, you're going to do it for her. So, it was just, it was another magical moment, like the Cardiff game, coming back from an injury, scoring, and then obviously losing a loved one and then scoring. It was just, it was written in the stars. And for it to be my first Premier League goal as well, not just any goal, like that goal was dedicated all to her.
You spoke about your dad a lot during the interview as well. I just wonder, with the age that he's at, the age that you're at, and then the manager, how does that triangle work? Because there's certain things that your dad will say that you'll dismiss because it's your dad. Certain things that the manager says that you've got to take on board that might just be different messages.
Well, I think my dad and the boss have a good relationship. They're always speaking to each other when they see each other and stuff like that. So, and my dad knows a lot about football. You know, he's been in and around it for ages. So for me personally, I don't feel like there's nothing he won't say that the manager wouldn't say, and vice versa. So yeah, whoever says anything to me, whether it's, you know, the manager or my dad or my uncle or whoever it is, whoever has their opinion or has something, criticism, whatever it is, I always take it on board and always think about it myself and try and, you know, put it into my game. And because at the end of the day, these people are only here to help you and only here to make you a better person and a better player, and whatever it is, you know, I always want to improve as a player and as a person. So me, whatever I hear, I always try to take it on board. One story actually, which is quite funny, when I was at Fulham, we played Tottenham, we won 11-1, I scored 9 and I think assisted 1, but the one goal that they scored was because of me. I was like dilly-dallying in and around our box, I think just because the game was may have been like 8-0 at this time. I was just, don't know, doing something stupid, and I lost the ball, they scored. Obviously scoring 9 goals, it's like, it's only one goal, like I don't care about it, blah blah blah. I scored, you know, 9 other goals to help out my team and stuff, and I think that's the most confident I've ever walked back to the car in my life after a game. I thought, right, this is the only time my dad ain't gonna say anything. Got in the car, looked at my dad, gave him a little smile, went, how about that then? And he looked at me with his most serious face in the world, and I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, it was good, but the one goal was your fault. And then for the whole journey home, he was obviously giving me pointers into how I could have, you know, gone about it differently and for the team not to have conceded and it being my fault. And yeah, I think since then, every single game, he always had something to say. But it goes back to what I said about whatever criticism I get, whoever it's from, I just want to, you know, keep taking it on board and keep being a better person and a better player.
Ronnie Moran.
I was in my head, I'm thinking, I had the same sort of scenario. I scored 5, yeah. Ironically, against Fulham. I come into the dressing room, I'm the best player in the world. In my head, I'm the best player Liverpool have ever seen.
Yep.
Gets in the dressing room, Ronnie Moran, obviously one of the top coaches ever for Liverpool, turned around and went, you should have had 6. That would just... Reality can't rest chess on your laurels, can you?
It's, well, then I think what's
keeping
you
on your toes, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just to finish with then, Harvey, and it's funny, isn't it? Because you come as a young player and you achieve so much in the early years. So if you had a question, something like, how would you like to be remembered at Liverpool? You would probably say at the start, to win trophies and everything else. Does that change how you want to be remembered now at the end of your Liverpool time in terms of what target you would set out from here?
Absolutely not. I feel... the club has got so much history behind it, and for me, I just want to keep adding to the history. I just want to keep, you know, winning trophies, breaking records for Liverpool, like personally as well. And for me, I want to be here for the rest of my career. Touch wood that happens, but yeah, for me, it's just making sure I go out and play each and every game like it's my last, give it all on the pitch, and play for the badge. As I've said, I've been through so much, you know, disappointment and things in my life and in my football career so far. So it's just about enjoying the moment, enjoying playing in front of these wonderful fans, enjoying playing for the badge, putting that lovely red kit on and playing at Anfield. And as I said, Liverpool is my home, and there's no better place to do it.
Thanks for listening to today's show. If you're listening on Apple and enjoyed it, leave a comment and feel free also to leave us a 5-star rating to help others find our shows. We'll be back with a brand new episode in 2 weeks' time. Until then, remember to follow We Are Liverpool on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can watch every episode on our official YouTube channel too. We'll see you next time.